McNeil. Both former Presidents Barack Obama and George W. Bush have paid tribute to late Senator John McCain, and speaking very highly of the senator who they both once challenged for the office of president. Meghan McCain delivered a tearful message about a father, and as AP Sagar Magani reports, some of those words were directed at U.S. President Trump, who was asked not to attend.
I love you, Dad.
Meghan McCain was the first speaker at John McCain's memorial service at Washington National Cathedral.
We gather here to mourn the passing of American greatness. The real thing, not cheap rhetoric from men who will never come near the sacrifice he gave so willingly, nor the opportunistic appropriation of those who live lives of comfort and privilege while he suffered and served.
It was a clear shot at President Trump, who was not invited to the service while his three immediate predecessors were. Meghan McCain added, "The America of John McCain has no need to be made great again, because America was always great." Sagar Magani, Washington.
Family, loved ones, celebrities, and prominent political leaders, including former U.S. President Bill Clinton, were among the thousands who gathered at Detroit's Greater Grace Temple Friday for an all-day funeral ceremony to honor the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. Former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder was among the speakers.
She was that rare queen who never lost the common touch. She could drop her fur coat on the stage of the Kennedy Center in front of those with great power and great wealth, and continue to care about the plight of poor, unfairly treated people in forgotten parts of this country.
Franklin died on August 16th from complications of pancreatic cancer. The Trump administration has cut funding to the UN agency that helps Palestinian refugees, calling the organization irredeemably flawed. This is VOA News. President Trump notified Congress he plans to sign a trade agreement with Mexico within 90 days after talks with Canada ended without an immediate deal to update the North American Free Trade Agreement. The talks were overshadowed by reports that Mr. Trump had boasted any deal with Canada would be totally on U.S. terms. Canada's Foreign Minister, Chrystia Freeland.
We're looking for a good deal, not just any deal, and we will only agree to a deal that is a good deal for Canada. We're not there yet.
Canada rejoined the talks to revamp the North American Free Trade Agreement after Mexico and the United States announced a bilateral deal Monday. Alexander Zakharchenko, the leader of a Russian-backed separatist group, was killed on Friday in a blast at a cafe. The official media arm of the unrecognized republic confirmed his death, along with the injuries to at least one other rebel government official in an explosion it labeled a terrorist attack. The assassination, the latest in a series against prominent pro-Russian rebels fighting in East Ukraine, risk reigniting already simmering tensions between Russia and Ukraine. The U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands said in a statement that two people injured in a stabbing incident Friday in Amsterdam's Central Station are U.S. citizens. Dutch police say the attacker was an Afghan citizen who was shot by police and is in their custody. A United Nations watchdog committee accuses China of holding more than 1 million Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in political re-education camps in a western region. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA in Geneva.
The 18 independent experts of the UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination say they have received numerous credible reports of widespread torture and ill-treatment in China. Committee member Nicola Morugan says those subjected to cruel treatment include Tibetans, Uyghurs, and other ethnic minorities, as well as political protesters and human rights defenders.
The committee has been alarmed by numerous reports of detention of large numbers of ethnic Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities held incommunicado and often for long periods without being charged or tried under the pretext of countering terrorism and religious extremisms. The committee regrets that there is no official data on how many people are in long-term detention.
The committee reports many people are forced to spend varying periods of time in political re-education camps.
Lisa Schlein for VOA. And Brazil's electoral court has ruled that the former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva will not be allowed to run in this year's presidential campaign. He's currently serving a 12-year prison sentence on a bribery charge. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
very good evening to you all and welcome to Nightline Africa. We're coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington.
In fulfillment of what I have earlier on undertaken to do in order to address the matter in a transparent manner and in the public interest, I have appointed a 7-member commission to inquire into the post-election violence.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa announces the appointment of a 7-member commission to investigate violence in the aftermath of last month's disputed elections.
It is dangerous. It's not only dangerous to foreign nationals, our brothers and sisters coming from our neighboring countries, predominantly Black African brothers and sisters, but it's also dangerous for South Africans and poor communities.
Sharon Ekambaram, who leads the Refugee and Migrant Rights Program for legal advocacy group Lawyers for Human Rights. Xenophobic attacks have surged in South Africa in the past week, with at least 4 foreigners killed in clashes with angry locals.
Some of them, or majority of them, are in the creative sector. Either they are doing fabrication of metals, or they are creating applications, or they are doing visual arts or crafts or something. Mm. So the creative economy is huge, and it's employing a lot of youth, but earning little from it.
Norman Mbabazi Akiki is the president of the Intellectual Property Center, IPC, in Uganda. His organization advocates for stronger intellectual property and copyright laws to protect Africa's creative and innovative industries. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Nightline Africa. On July 30th, Zimbabweans elected Emmerson Mnangagwa to a 5-year term. Following the announcement of the winner, demonstrators took to the streets in protest of what they said was rampant rigging by the ruling ZANU-PF party. Police shot and killed several demonstrators in the capital, Harare. In this week, President Mnangagwa announced the appointment of a 7-member commission to investigate violence in the aftermath of those elections. Reporter Kuznai Vinavashe has details.
The post-election demonstrations resulted in the death of 6 unarmed civilians when soldiers took to the streets to help the police disperse the rioting crowds. In a bid to resolve the matter that was widely covered across the globe, President Mnangagwa announced Wednesday that he was taking action.
In fulfillment of what I have earlier on undertaken to do in order to address the matter in a transparent manner and in the public interest, I have appointed a 7-member commission to inquire into the post-election violence.
Mnangagwa names the members of the commission.
Former President of the Republic of South Africa, His Excellency Kgalema Motlanthe as Chairman. Rodden Dixon, QC, United Kingdom. Chief Emeka Anyaoku, former Commonwealth Secretary General, Federal Republic of Nigeria. Former Chief of Defence Forces of the Tanzanian People's Defence Forces, General Davis Mwamunyange. Professor Charity Manyeruke, Political Science, University of Zimbabwe. Professor Love Momaduku, Faculty of Law, Constitutional Law, University of Zimbabwe. And Mrs. Rimai Nyemba, former President of the Law Society of Zimbabwe.
The commission will be sworn in upon President Mnangagwa's return from Asia, where he is attending the China-Africa Summit. The independent commission is meant to complete its investigations within 3 months. Members will submit their findings to the president, who will make the report public. Nick Mangwana is a ZANU-PF representative in the United Kingdom. He has great confidence in the commission.
Brilliant. That was just a masterstroke by the president. I believe the skills mix in that commission and the skill set of the whole commission itself, the pedigree of the commissioners, is just top-notch, and it will deliver a very, very independent and solid report, which will be presented to the president and hence to the nation.
Mnangagwa says the commission will look into the causes of the violence and identify the participants and leaders. It will also look for the reasons the military got involved and determine if the army's heavy-handedness was warranted. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and other political developments. He says the terms of reference are inadequate.
What the commission needs to focus on is who ordered the soldiers onto the streets. And that is what's missing in the terms of reference that President Mnangagwa read. It's missing. Will this commission provide us with accurate results? And the answer is no, it will not, because their terms of reference are already warped. So already before the commission even starts, the results are already skewed.
Some of the commission members are already coming under scrutiny. Love Momaduku is one of the presidential candidates who conceded defeat to Mnangagwa when the main opposition leader insisted there was vote fraud in favor of the ruling ZANU-PF. Professor Charity Manyeruke is a Mnangagwa loyalist, and Vimbai Nyemba is a reputable legal practitioner who was appointed the chairperson of Procurement Regulatory Authority of Zimbabwe by Mnangagwa. Critics ask if they can deliver a fair and independent evaluation, a question that can be debated once the report is completed and made public. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zwinawashe from Harare.
The UN Children's Fund reports that it will be on hand to ensure a smooth and safe start to the new year in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, following the government's decision to reopen schools in Ebola-affected areas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Government authorities say some 250 schools in North Kivu and Ituri provinces in eastern DRC will open their doors to more than 82,500 children when the new school year begins on Monday. These areas are the epicenter of the latest Ebola epidemic in DRC. The Ebola virus is extremely contagious. It can spread quickly through direct contact with blood and other bodily fluids of infected people. UNICEF says it is scaling up operations in the region to promote prevention measures. It says school principals and teachers will receive training on Ebola prevention and protection and on how to educate children on good hygiene practices to avoid the spread of the virus. Spokesman Christophe Bouyerak says UNICEF and partners have reached more than 2 million people with Ebola prevention messages since the start of the outbreak on August 1st.
An increasing number of communities are now aware about Ebola and how to, they know better how to prevent its transmission. The active involvement of concerned communities is key to stopping the spread of the disease. So we are working closely with them to promote hand washing and good hygiene practice.
Latest World Health Organization estimates find 116 cases of Ebola, including 77 deaths. UNICEF reports children comprise an unusually high proportion of people affected by the disease. It notes 24% of confirmed cases are under age 24. Bouyerak says more than 150 psychosocial workers have been trained to help comfort children infected with the disease in treatment centers. He says they also will support children who have been discharged as free of Ebola and are at risk of stigmatization when they return to their communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Economists project that in a few years, revenue from the creative and cultural industries across Africa will double its current rates. That will be an economic boom for countries like Nigeria, for example, where it is estimated that the creative industries of this West African nation contribute over $7 billion to its GDP. Currently, the growing music industry alone is projected to bring in over $80 million each year. On a continental level, this is good news for many countries that are trying to find solutions to the issue of high youth unemployment. Young people provide the bulk of the labor force in these creative industries. However, experts say that the same industries are yet to realize their full potential. It's partly due to the lack of support from governments, that is, in terms of policies that protect innovation and creativity. Norman Mbabazi Akiki is the president of Intellectual Property Center, IPC, in Uganda. His organization advocates for stronger intellectual property and copyright laws. He tells me that these laws are necessary for any country to realize the innovative and creative potential of its youth and ultimately grow the local economy.
As long as you've done something, it could be a poem, it could be a script, it could be a movie, it could be a song, immediately you release it, that makes you the first owner. And then no one else should be able to infringe on it. Probably if it's a song, to synchronize it into a movie. If it's a movie, to make copies. If it's a book, not to publish it without your authorization. So it is my creation, authority to commercialize.
Okay. Currently, are there any copyright laws in Uganda?
Yeah, we have the Copyright Act. It's a 2006 law. Then the regulations are 2010. I am made aware that they are trying to amend the regulations and the act, as well as having in place the collective management organization regulations coming out. The laws are there, but the existence of the laws is not commensurate with the knowledge being spread across.
How are they enforced? Who enforces them and how do they do it?
Well, intellectual property is a private property. It is a private right.
Am I the one who is supposed to enforce, take you to court if you're infringing on my intellectual property or my copyright?
Yes, that's what it is. Because it's like land. Yeah. It's like land. Land, unless you take the trespasser to court, the government wouldn't do that for you. Whereas there are criminal sanctions, but the civil remedies always are those that we seek for. Even in our laws, we have criminal sanctions against infringers.
In many countries, copyright laws enforced through organizations or associations that represent creatives or innovators or entrepreneurs or whoever they are that own the rights to whatever material that they created. You're saying in Uganda it's an individual who does it.
By law, that's what it is. But there have been certain organizations that have been formed to collectively manage. For example, the musicians have the Uganda Performing Rights Society. The film industry has the Uganda Federation of Movie Industry. Mm. Then the publishers of books have the Uganda Reprographic Rights Organization.
So those are the organizations that are in charge for these different sectors of the entertainment industry to enforce the law, to go after the people who are breaking the law.
Yeah, but then there are those who have not come up, like the visual artists. Mm. Nothing is happening on their side. The software makers. Nothing's happening on their side. And I think for me, it's an issue to do with the sensitization. It's an issue to do with being the right organization to do the work. People remain without the knowledge of what they should be or what they should earn. They don't know which right they own, how they can commercialize it. That's where the challenge is.
Now, so how are people right now able to create if there is nobody enforcing the laws, the copyright laws? How have people been able to produce their music, for example? What are the incentives behind it?
Now, in Uganda, the music is a totally different ballgame. Mm. Because the musicians only earn from shows. They don't rightly. There's also, of course, some money that comes from the Performing Rights Society.
But like royalties, little royalties here and there.
But it's very small, considering some of them don't even know that that such collections are being made on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So that's why IPC, or Intellectual Property Center, becomes relevant. Our role is to make sure everybody gets a piece of this law. Everybody is sensitized in such a way we have a lot of interviews with different stakeholders in the different innovation sector. And then we have to broadcast these interviews in English and Luganda, which is the widely spoken language, so that they can share their experiences and others who are in the same boat can learn from.
What are some of the main challenges in terms of enforcing these laws?
There's a public resistance
people don't want to pay for this.
People don't want to pay, and the government thinks those who are enforcing are not doing the right thing.
What advice do you give to musicians, to innovators, in terms of collecting the dues that are owed to them?
I advise many times we've had the workshops. We have been telling the innovators that, look, we are the major aspect in innovation is protection. Seek for protection, because whether it's a patent, it's copyright, it's a trademark, or an industrial design, if you do not have it protected, chances of earning from it dies instantly. Innovation must come with value addition.
Mm-hmm.
That will give you the actual worth to call the shots when you find somebody who is willing
to
commercialize your innovation.
Norman Mbabazi Akiki is the president of Intellectual Property Center in Uganda. His organization advocates for stronger intellectual property and copyright laws. He joined me in the studios here at the Voice of America. Xenophobic attacks have surged in South Africa in the past week, with at least 4 foreign nationals killed in clashes with angry locals who accused them of taking scarce jobs. On Friday, a new anti-foreigner political party marched in Johannesburg. It was demanding that non-South Africans leave the country. And VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg, with reporting from Zahir Kasim.
The 150 or so protesters who marched through downtown Johannesburg on Friday demanded the deportation of all undocumented foreigners in South Africa by the end of the year. Their protests followed a new outburst of deadly xenophobic violence in the Soweto area. Police say 27 people were arrested and that 2 face murder charges. Friday's march was led by Tembelani Ngubane, the founder of the new party known as the African Basic Movement. He says the party's views on foreign nationals are central to its platform.
We cannot allow foreigners, even local foreigners, to do small businesses in South Africa. That is for South Africans only. Illegal foreigners cannot do any business. So the Constitution says they must be deported.
Nearby at a nail salon, Malawian national Tasila Banda was hard at work, filing and painting nails. But she took a moment to share her feelings on the protesters and on South Africans in general. Her words indicate that there is a deep gulf between the two communities.
You see, they are saying foreigners, we are stealing their jobs. Well, they can't do what I'm doing. You see, they will say foreigners, they are taking their wives. They can't support their wives. All they do is drinking beer or go and steal. That's it.
Some 2 million foreign nationals live in South Africa, according to the most recent census. Ngubane's group believes that foreign nationals take jobs and bring crime into the country. But researchers have found that these immigrants are often job creators and are not disproportionately responsible for violent crime. Sharona Kambaram, who heads a refugee and migrant rights program for Lawyers for Human Rights, says her group is filing a legal complaint against the party. Her group says the party is spreading hate speech, which is against the law in South Africa. She says these views hurt everyone, not just foreigners.
It is dangerous. It's not only dangerous to foreign nationals, our brothers and sisters coming from our neighboring countries, predominantly Black African brothers and sisters, but it's also dangerous for South Africans and poor communities. And I think that law enforcement agencies need to be much more visible. We call on the police to ensure that they take action. This is unlawful.
Both of South Africa's main political parties, the ruling African National Congress and the opposition Democratic Alliance, have condemned the recent violence and say that xenophobia has no place in the Rainbow Nation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Last month, China's Ministry of National Defense invited high-ranking military representatives from 50 African countries, including Nigeria, to the first Africa-China Defense and Security Forum. Dr. Ishaka Adams is a lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the Chinese incursion into Africa and implications for the U.S. and the West. He says that though the Chinese are free to deal with Africans, African countries should ensure that such engagement do not override their national interests.
First and foremost, I think China's engagement with Africa is belated. For a world that is moving towards unipolarism, one would expect that China should be more involved in order to balance the overwhelming and preponderant influence of the West. There are many advantages for us as a continent, and Nigeria in particular. It gives us the opportunity to have options when the ships are down. In international relations, no country will protect you. You have to protect yourself. The interests of each country matters. And so when there are conflicts of interest, over the years, the West have not been able to provide the needed support that Africa yearns. In that wise, it is important and it is imperative for Africa to have alternative security allies. As to whether China can match the West, because the West has been on ground. They have been engaging with Africa. They have the infrastructure. They have the architecture. They have everything. China is just coming up in terms of its engagement. But as time goes on, I think it's expected that they will be able to provide the leverage that we yearn as a continent.
China has also increased economic presence in Africa through financial grants for infrastructure. Do you also see this as a threat to the U.S.-Africa policy?
For me, it depends on how you define the threat perception is about who feels threatened. It is not our business whether the West is threatened or it is our own security that we should be more important about. We should be more concerned about. Our security is very, very important to us. And whoever is going to provide security for us, for instance, we should embrace. In terms of infrastructure, I have not seen so much Chinese engagement in terms of infrastructure. A lot of people have talked about engagement in oil sector, engagement in telecoms. That is an area that is growing. I'm aware that the U.S. has slammed a lot of sanctions on some countries or some companies that they should not trade with. If they trade with China, behind them, because of the cheap infrastructural facilities available from the Chinese end. This is about trade war that is geared towards protecting U.S. interests and the West particularly, because the Chinese telecoms infrastructure is cheaper. And because of that, the U.S. wants to continue to monopolize and to continue to reap the dividends of that in that sector. And that's exactly why all this. So China, for me, apart from a few trade relations, they have not really been involved in the infrastructure that we yearn as a continent. In the oil sector, not much of oil exploration is done by Chinese companies. Overwhelming majority is to the West.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson warned African countries that assistance from China includes risk, including debt to Beijing. Do you agree? And what are the strengths of the U.S. or European models for Africa? Can they provide political and economic support that China cannot?
National interest is what is most paramount. And anybody that claims to like you or to love your country, to want to protect your interests, is deceiving you. So national interest of the West, the various countries in the West, is what is paramount to them. So if the former U.S. Secretary of State is saying that it's at a cost or it's a debt, we have always been indebted to the West. Whatever we have taken, foreign aids are not free. Over the years, foreign aids have failed to develop Africa. They came in cotton leaves, and then we've not seen. Maybe some people will blame our various local and national regimes. But at the same time, these foreign aids, they have strings attached to them that does not promote development as we envisage. What we should be more concerned is that our leaders should be more focused as to what do we really want from external engagement? What do we want for economic partnership? What do we want from foreign trade? Our interest is paramount. Then we will be able to achieve something out of it. But if the engagement is skewed in the favor of the Chinese, then we should not blame anybody. We should blame ourselves, not the Chinese.
That was Dr. Ishaka Adams. He's a lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. He was speaking to reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. You're listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi, in Washington, D.C., and coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Kati fatiso kuhinga mataka mwana wa Merci, Seigneur. Natango tozana besoin ma pamboli natango tozana besoin ma kambona biso kende liboso mendenge nini na kati ya mboka kombo ya Kofi ekoma kotanga makoleka kombo ya Yesu biente Kofi azaneka Kofi azana posa ya ba esclavete bato ba kuri ko vivre te soki ba na kombo na ite na monoko ah vraiment na kokona ngape na nyoso te mais nini ko nini 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 ko
Adura mi ti ba lua lua e shegoni Adura mi
Adura mi ti gba Oluwa e
Oluwa e se goni
Adura mi ti gba Oluwa e
Oluwa e se goni
Yeah It's rough for monyan ba ko ma me why Go
Obi Anthony collection Obi Anthony collection Yeah be Obi Anthony collection
What else
God eh Obi Anthony collection Obi Anthony collection
Aba
Obi Anthony collection
Kokokokode Yeah Memma woni pe bi embu abonfia I hope a promo yen yina bu huntia Or ya what time for jano maninvia Yambu amu amun sina bumpia Go!
Se wupe mu anyo menyi na edi Nana nyame ni ya wakano nebebe mo Se wuma usa swabi ponyi ne tutu So my party don't lose God Kan wako ma doye Everybody sing it hallelujah
yeah.
Hallelujah. Everybody sing it, hallelujah. Hallelujah. Make me sing, oh. Oh, yeah. I say, help me sing, oh. Oh, yeah.
Namu fisa me shiasi. Me koya ma samba. Che. I want you to kakira me fe munti. No, I'm say my wife, mini dama. We need a wono. Namu fisa me yasanseni. Che. Uhumiana wo ye ma show afede weni bo me so pena wo se hwan poni na nenya me nsa no afede wo humi tutu mana mo se me ye jonki ne sabusu bu kebi shame on you too afede me hu se me makobole yonki hweno kene ne mo se monkey if I check I dey say you dey hungry why ye yanka wo da so sha boski mi wu ye de na nenya me ti ase woni me nye pe wo bia ne ne vi ase Mana me da bent so wa flower no we be am for handkerchief from the pemeni
ase se wo pemo ani o meni na edi
what else
nana nyame ni awa kanu ne bebe mo we wo ma usa swa bi ponyi na tutu so my body don't lose God kan wa ko ma doye everybody sing it, hallelujah hallelujah everybody sing it, hallelujah Hallelujah, make me sing, oh,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I say help me sing, oh, yeah.
My win chin me 10 years, me wanka way back. My floppy, this be my payback. My enemies see for day God, me care so I don't want to disobey God. My try some more, they may be to prison. Wa bra mu ni particular reason. Mo dwe me ho, me need to go for your meeting. Fatu wasum, I don't wanna be repeating. Nyame na ebo me ho ban ti munye foko. Money no be problem, ga no ni me moto. Tu weni hwe me ho na meni, ni me short to. Me mo be ninje, wa chena me ye don't know.
Ona wo boss run asasi ne munya menti na ye frawo Adonai. Ni oma wa ya mami ni me busya funa so me ni be brenti I won't lie. Ona wo boss run asasi ne munya menti na ye frawo Adonai. Ni oma wa ya mami ni me busya funa so me She ran away from me, man, they put me to ya. Say, God, eh. You only have me for now, see, eh. I'm a God, eh. Why am I getting me to see, eh. I'm a God, eh. Why don't you know me to see, eh. Baba God, eh. Baba, you be too much, eh. Baba God, eh. Baba, you be too much, eh. Baba God, eh. Baba, you be too much, eh. Baba God, Baba God, Baba God, Baba God. Se wupe mu ani o meni na edi. Nana nyame ni awa kanu ne bebe mo. Se wuma usa swabi ponyi ne tutu. So my party don't lose God, kan wako ma doye. Everybody sing it, hallelujah. Hallelujah. Everybody sing it, hallelujah. Hallelujah, make me sing, oh, oh yeah, I say help me sing, oh, oh yeah.
Street beat, what else? Go.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a man who uses force is afraid of reasoning. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, recently announced additional assistance to support achieving the goals outlined in the Bilateral Development Objectives Assistance Agreement between the U.S. and Nigerian governments, signed in 2015. $25 million will strengthen good governance by supporting state governments' efforts to bolster Nigeria's open government partnership commitments to improve transparency and fight corruption. An additional $1.5 million will support a healthier, more educated population in targeted states through the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, also known as PEPFAR, for a total of $26.5 million in additional assistance. The additional new funding brings the total U.S. government assistance provided under the five-year Development Objectives Agreement to $1.1 billion. USAID is also working with federal and state health ministries to build stronger health systems with the aim of guaranteeing equitable access to quality health care services nationwide. USAID collaborated with Nigeria's Ministries of Budget and National Planning, Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, as well as state-level government counterparts, to structure the Bilateral Assistance Agreement, which runs through 2020. The United States believes that as the most populous country in Africa with the largest economy on the continent, Nigeria holds tremendous influence over the future of Africa, Acting Mission Director Aaron Holleran said. USAID is committed to partnering with the government and the people of Nigeria to address its development challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials. This is